At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
The following is a special presentation of Alpha Media. Welcome to Beyond the Headlines. In-depth interviews on topics of concern here in Portland and the Northwest. Now, here's your host, Brett Recap.
Well, thank you very much, and welcome in to the 456th edition of Beyond the Headlines, a behind-the-scenes look at some of the stories making news here in the Pacific Northwest as we move through this month of February 2023 on all seven of our Alpha Media Portland radio stations, including FM News 101. Well, they say Father Time is undefeated, and Uncle Sam has a way of also winning, which means the time to plan for your family's estate is now. With that in mind, you'll want to hear my interview with attorney Allie Katz with PersonalFamilyLawyer.com. She's an expert in this category. Allie says divvying up a late relative's estate is a smooth process if the person and family have sat down with a professional before that person passes away. It's the family politics that often are the hard part, which is why she says those decisions should be made today.
Absolutely. And that certain age, funny enough, isn't 40 or 50 or 60 or 70. It's actually really 18. Why would it be 18? It's because we don't have any idea when something is going to happen. It could happen at any time, right? So it's not just about father time, but it's really about, you know, the cycles of life and reality. If things happen when they happen, we don't know. And once we turn 18, we're adults. And as adults, we have a responsibility to make sure that if something happens to us, everything we have is going to be handled by someone. And if we don't decide who that is, and if we don't legally document who that is, well, then it becomes up to a judge to decide. And you don't want to subject your family to that, even if you really don't have much, especially in a way, if you don't have much, Brett, because then proportionally it is so costly for them. So the age is 18. Really. And of course, the older you get, the more risk you are accumulating.
This is your area of expertise. And before we get into some of the nuts and bolts there about making sure that your I's are dotted and T's are crossed and so forth on the legal side, you talked about the mentality of just getting into this, planning for the future and beyond. Do you find clients that you work with or people that you speak with, it is hard to get into that mindset?
Yeah, but we are changing that actually. So the way that I look at it and the way that it has occurred in my own life actually is that by looking at the reality of death, I mean, it's going to happen to all of us. We all know it's going to happen. So it's existing in the back of our minds in some way, this ticking clock of, oh my gosh, do I have enough time? Oh my gosh, am I on the right path? Oh my gosh, am I making the right decisions? Right? A lot of us have those questions. What we don't realize is that a lot of that becomes very clear by taking just an honest look at the reality and the inevitability of death. And we can do that in a way that's really empowering. Now, it's funny to think that a lawyer might be able to help you do that because we don't think of lawyers that way, right, Brett? We think of lawyers as like, I'm only going to talk to a lawyer if something bad happens. Or I'm only going to talk to a lawyer if I absolutely have to. But I'm on a mission to change that. First of all, to help lawyers see that they can be the people who can really help people make great decisions by looking at death and actually step into their full purpose in life by looking at death. So I help lawyers understand that they can be that. And then I help the rest of us see that, oh, I can actually turn to a lawyer to help me know that I'm on the right path for my life, that I'm making the decisions that will allow me to live my best life, that will help me to face death in a really eyes wide open, honest way, a heart-centered way that actually transforms my life. Okay, well, I want some of that.
It's so well said. Attorney Allie Katz is with us, founder of Personal Family Lawyer and a free masterclass, How to Talk Money with the People You Love. I suppose it's junk in, junk out. It's all documents. Same with tax time, any kind of legal issue that you enter into. It's what you have, right? Whether it's electronic or pieces of paper or whatever. How do you make sure you just have the right stuff, the right documents?
Yeah. So the starting place is just a willingness to look at what do you have. You know, I've been doing this 20 years now, and it is so surprising to me that most people really don't even know what they do have. We just don't, we kind of take it for granted. We don't really think about it. We certainly don't talk to family about it. You know, I just met with a woman recently who literally just found out her father is in his 80s. And she just found out that her father actually has close to $100 million of assets. That's a big thing to find out when you're in your 40s and you didn't grow up knowing that your dad had that kind of resources. Now, on the flip side, many years ago, about 7 years ago now, my sister and I found out that our mom didn't have enough to live on for the rest of her life, even though she, you know, had supported us throughout her whole life as a single mom. She was an art teacher. She was making about $80,000 a year as an art teacher, which is pretty great money for an art teacher. But she only had $200,000 in her retirement account, which wouldn't be enough to take care of her for the rest of her life. Because we found that out when we did, we've been able to make decisions over the past 7 years that has helped her to be able to retire, which she wasn't doing. She was continuing to work year after year, not retiring because she knew she didn't have enough. So it's allowed her to retire and allowed her today to be living her best life. So we have to start by understanding what we have. And oftentimes that does start with talking to our parents and understanding what they have or what they don't have.
Yes. Let's talk about that. What we don't have, what we do have.
Yeah.
You say $200,000 is not a ton of money when it comes to retiring, but yet for some, that's a heck of a lot of money, almost $250,000.
Right.
What if you're somewhere on that spectrum of the haves, yeah, have nots, and you might even have not as many assets as you do bills.
Right, right. It's a really important thing that we have to be looking at together so that we're not blindsided by it, so that it's actually not what's driving that fear of that, right? It's kind of operating in the background, I think, for a lot of people. I'm not going to have enough. I'm not going to have enough. Now, here's the interesting thing, Brett. That fear of I'm not going to have enough drives people in the same way, whether they have $10,000, $200,000, or surprisingly, $100 million. You might say, well, if I had $100 million, I would not be driven by that. And yet, the funny thing is that you would, unless you did some internal work to heal the patterns that created that reality. It actually carries you, it carries through no matter how much money you earn. So what is the starting place to being able to handle that? It is with really understanding what is enough. What do you really need? What do you really need? What is this enough number? And that starts by looking at what do you have? What do you have? And again, I'm suggesting that you do this on a family level, not on an individual level, but on a family level. How much do you have, sister? How much do you have, mom? How much do you have, dad? Or how little, right? How little do you have? How much do I have? And then we begin to look at it on a family level. What do we need? What do we really need? And I want to give you an example here. When I was in my private practice, I had a woman come to me because her father was a janitor and he had been injured and he was in the hospital. Now, he only had $10,000. So clearly not 200,000, clearly not 100 million, just 10,000. And yet, because she had not been in relationship with her father around what he had, now he's in the hospital, she can't get access to the $10,000. Let's talk about how important it was to her to be able to get access to that $10,000. In some ways, even more important than the person who has $100 million, because that's all they had. And unfortunately, I, as a lawyer, could not help her get access to it affordably. She was going to have to go to court. Her getting access to that $10,000 was going to cost their family more than $10,000 to get access to it. What could Dad have done ahead of time, even though he was a janitor, even though he only had $10,000? He actually could have met with a lawyer ahead of time who would have helped him put in place very straightforward foundational legal documents that would have made it super simple for his daughter to get access to that $10,000, where it wouldn't have cost them more than what he had. But he didn't think of doing that because he thought, I don't have enough. But the reality is that he did have enough that it was important for her to be able to get access to it after he was gone, and then couldn't because of what the cost would be once it was too late.
What a tremendous example that is right there. Allie Katz with us, attorney, and we're talking about estate planning and mistakes and trying to avoid some of those mistakes. In the example that you gave, are you looking at it from the perspective of the individual who is toward the end of their lifespan or the family who is younger left behind? Mm-hmm. Because I'm guessing there's a lot of things that go into it. You want to leave assets, leave a nest egg if you can for your next generation, but you certainly don't want to leave them with a big bill, right? When you talk about an individual who might be in the hospital, let's say that, you know, they're eating up all assets that they might have had. Is it important for an older person who may not have as means just not to saddle anyone with anything after they leave this earth?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a really important question. Is how do I not leave a mess, right? So again, sometimes we think, well, I don't even have enough to think about it. And yet the reality is we all have something. So I was actually talking to a friend of mine the other day. He's a young man in his early 30s. He really doesn't have much. He's an artist. He has a car. He has a computer. He has an apartment. He pays rent. But as we were looking at what would happen if he became incapacitated or when he dies, two things came up. One is the question of who would make medical decisions for him if he could not make them for himself, and what it would cost him and his family if he had not legally documented his choices. I'm going to come back to that in a moment. But first, the other thing that we looked at is what does he really have that would need to be handled in the event of his death? And he said, well, I don't have anything. And I said, well, Dan, actually, you have this whole library of music that you've been creating. Think about every musician or every artist that didn't hit it big until after they died, right? And they had a library of content, of artistry that became worth a whole lot after they died. And if they did not take care of that during their lifetime, it left a huge mess for the people that they loved. In fact, the guy, I can't remember his name at this very moment. Perhaps it'll come back to me while we're together, but he was the man on PBS who did the paintings.
Oh, Bob Ross.
Yes.
Bob yes, with we'll the afro.
Yeah, exactly. We did an article on this and did not properly protect his work. And as a result, left a huge mess for the people he loved to deal with after he was gone. And so, you know, you got to really look deeper at what do you have and what will there be to be handled and dealt with when you are gone. The next piece is this piece around incapacity and who will make decisions for you and how will those decisions be made. So I had a friend, a good friend. In fact, she was such a good friend that she wanted me to be her healthcare decision maker. Her name is Jennifer. And we never got around to documenting that because we figured, oh, she doesn't have much. It's not a big deal. She's young. So we just never did. And then she was in a car accident that landed her in a coma. And everybody knew that she wanted me to be the decision maker. So they called me and I went to the hospital. And shortly after, her mom flew in from Iowa. Very, very nice woman, caring woman. And yet the way she wanted to make decisions for my friend Jennifer, it was very different than the way I wanted to make decisions because I knew what Jennifer would have wanted. I knew what supplements she was taking and would have wanted to continue taking, like CBD, for example, which her mom thought was the same thing as THC, marijuana, and didn't want Jennifer to have. I knew that Jennifer was gluten-free and dairy-free and wanted a specific kind of nutrition if she was hospitalized that her mom didn't care about. I knew which friends Jennifer would have wanted to maintain relationship with and to have access to her in the hospital. Her mom decided to cut off most of those relationships. And I knew that Jennifer would have wanted to stay in Colorado if at all possible. And her mom decided to take her back to Iowa. Now, all of that occurred at great cost to Jennifer's healing, as well as to Jennifer's bank account. It cost Jennifer didn't have very much money, but all of the money that she had was used to pay her mother's legal bills to fight for control of Jennifer's decisions.
Goodness. That's a tremendous waste of resources, and an excellent point how just modern day, the person ought to be able to make their own decisions. And I guess your biggest point today might be just have that piece of paper, everything in writing ahead of time, whether it's do it yourself or a high priced lawyer or whatever. As long as you have something official in the pipeline, you're going to save some headaches big time.
Yes. And so that's why I've created a training. If you go to my website at personalfamilylawyer.com, I have a lot of resources there to help you make the right choice for you, regardless of how much you have or really specific to how much you have, what you care about, and how to make those right choices. So if you go to the resources tab at personalfamilylawyer.com, you can watch a free training that I've created. Totally free. And it will guide you through the decisions on, do I need a lawyer? What can I do myself? If I am going to do it myself, how do I do it the right way? Because sure, there are things you can do yourself if you will, if you're simple, if your situation is simple and you're organized and you're not a procrastinator, there are for sure things you can do yourself. And so all of that is in my training at personalfamilylawyer.com. I encourage you to watch it. I encourage you to then decide, what are you going to do yourself? What are you going to hire a lawyer to do with you? And if you are going to hire a lawyer, then I recommend that you work with a personal family lawyer who has been trained in my methodologies for helping you to make the right decisions for yourself and for the people that you love, taking you through a process to help you make those right decisions rather than just putting in place a one-size-fits-all set of documents that is really the same thing you could do for yourself online.
Makes complete sense there, Allie Katz, and that's personalfamilylawyer.com. I checked it out right now. Does an attorney, do they work just for one person? What happens when there are a bunch of voices around an estate? Does it get muddy quickly? Or generally when you're alive and you're doing this ahead of time, attorney or someone doing the work themselves on their own or something through your website, do they advocate just for one person, I guess is my question, or do you get in trouble when there's too many voices?
Well, many times our lawyers will work multi-generationally. So let's say that I want to bring my mom into the planning process. So I always recommend you go first and then you invite your family in.
Gotcha.
You go first to show them I'm an adult. I'm ready to start making good decisions for myself. I'm not just going to say you do this. I'm going to say I'm doing this, mom or dad, sister or brother. I'm doing this for myself, or I'm doing this for myself, adult child. And then here's what my experience was. I feel so much better about myself as an adult, so much more responsible, so much better about my legal and financial decisions, so much better about knowing I'm on the right path because I've faced death with my eyes wide open. And now I want to invite you into the process, and then you can introduce them to your lawyer. And your lawyer then is going to have you sign conflict waivers, and your lawyer is absolutely going to need to speak. For example, if I bring my mom in, my lawyer will need to speak with my mom alone to make sure that I'm not causing my mom to operate under any sort of duress, right? That she's making her own decisions and that I'm not forcing her to do anything. And then the family can be doing planning together. Then the family can be doing planning together once everything is clear that there's no duress, there's no coercion or anything like that.
Sure. What if you change your mind? What if the person with the estate has a pecking order, if you will, a person they want to be, maybe you have the right word for me, a custodian or just somebody in charge?
Guardian, trustee.
Guard. Yeah.
A trustee, yeah.
What if,
absolutely.
What if that person goes AWOL and they want a different family member to be, who's a little more reasonable to be in charge?
Yeah. So there should be a pecking order. There absolutely should be a pecking order because we always want somebody that is named as the primary, and then we want a backup and a backup to that person. That way, there's no risk that the decisions get left up to a court to decide. And the most important thing is that that pecking order is disclosed during life. So one of the things our lawyers will help their clients to do is sit down with their family and share why they've made the decisions they've made. That helps to ensure that there's no fights after death. Because once it already happens, then people don't understand why. Why did mom pick Sally instead of me, right? There's a beautiful episode of the show, This Is Us. And they really go into this because in the episode, the mom picks, there's, you know, a daughter and two sons, and she picks her daughter to be the decision maker. And they go into all of the emotions around that decision and how it got made and what the impact is on the sons. But all of that gets to be worked through while mom is living, while mom still has capacity, rather than it landing in the family after mom is gone, at which point it can create irreparable rifts in the family. And irreparable rifts, conflict that cannot be addressed after somebody dies, is one of the biggest risks to our generational wealth, because the relational wealth is really the most valuable wealth. And yet most lawyers don't really have any idea how to handle that, how to plan for it, how to help their clients to plan for it. They're focusing on documents, wills, trusts, healthcare directives, powers of attorney. That's the easy part. The hard part is the emotional dynamics. And so part of what we train our lawyers on is how to be with the family through these challenging emotional dynamics, not just putting in place the legal documents, which are fairly simple, fairly easy to do, which eventually robots will be able to do, but instead how to really, yeah, right? To bring in the humanity, which is the ultimate wealth that every family has, regardless of if they have that $10,000 or that $100 million.
Right on the money. And when it's out and it's discussed as adults and there's communication, it just makes things so much easier, even if they are difficult conversations to have. So attorney Allie Katz, founder of Personal Family Lawyer and personalfamilylawyer.com, also free masterclass, How to Talk Money with the People You Love. Just a wealth of information, if I may say so. I really enjoyed that. Do you want to maybe summarize? Is it just communication? Is that your main message here for people who are either getting towards the end of their life, or let's say they're 18, they're adults, just like you said, or they just want to be responsible, whether it be for their family member or for themselves and their estate? What's the biggest message? Is it communication?
It is get educated. Do your own work first, and then talk to your family about doing theirs. So go to personalfamilylawyer.com, watch my training, get clear on what you can do yourself, what you need a lawyer to do with you. If you need a lawyer, find a lawyer there at personalfamilylawyer.com. See what you have. Sit down with that lawyer to look at your family dynamics, look at your assets, create a plan that is the right plan for you at your budget, based on your needs and desires, and then invite your family into the process and know that, oh, wow, I'm being an adult. This feels really good. And see how that then ripples out through the rest of your life.
That is attorney Allie Katz with personalfamilylawyer.com, an excellent website with a lot of resources as we all get ready to plan our family's estate ahead of time, make things a heck of a lot easier down the road. You're listening to the 456th edition of Beyond the Headlines. I'm your host, Brett Recamp. An instructor at Portland Community College is going to take a very long ride in support of fellow veterans. KXL's Tim Lance talks with a veteran from a military family, Jonathan Williams, who plans to ride his motorcycle up the Canadian Arctic to raise attention about a serious problem. He starts by talking about why he's going for a trip like this.
Well, it's the primary reason is to raise awareness to veteran and active duty military suicide is the primary goal on this.
So why is this so important to you? Obviously, you know, it's an important topic, but why is it important to you personally?
Well, I'm a veteran myself, and my wife and I, our son is going on now 11 years of active duty service.
Gotcha. Okay. So is this a big, big problem among vets? Is that why it's such a concern for you?
It is. There was a study that was released in 2021 that found that veterans between the ages of 18 and 34, their suicide rates were more than 2.5 times the national average. And for our active duty military, suicide is the number two cause of death, and they are 4 times more likely to die at their own hands than they are at the hands of the enemy.
Wow. Okay.
Yep.
We are talking with Jonathan Williams from the PCC Diesel Service Tech Department. He's going to go on a motorcycle ride to the Canadian Arctic and doing it, as you've heard, in support of veterans. And you're not going alone, Jonathan. Tell us more about that.
No, so we're going to have between 6 and 8 riders that are going on this trip along with 1 to 2 support vehicles. And we are working with Veterans Back 40 Adventure and Warfighter Outfitters, 2 nonprofits located there in Oregon. They're kind of the umbrella that we're working under for this project.
Gotcha. And why a motorcycle trip to the Canadian Arctic as a way of bringing attention to this and doing what you're doing in support of the veterans?
So that's a great question. I had to sell this to my wife first, and her first question to me was, well, why not just go across the country? And if you want to get people's attention and really, really hold them, you have to have a good story. And a group of riders, say, going to Washington, D.C. and back, something like that has been done 1,000 times. So you need a good hook. And so we are going to the Arctic Ocean. If we did a cross-country trip, it would be all pavement. You know, we kind of have some luxuries of hotels and we could work around the weather. But for this ride, this is going to be 5,400 miles round trip. A quarter of that's going to be on dirt and gravel roads. We're going to have to deal with weather. And so it's a much more difficult ride, but that just is going to help with the story.
Well, if you're trying to get attention and set up a good story, mission accomplished. You've got that part down already. Jonathan, safe travels to you, and thanks for your time on Portland's Afternoon News.
Thank you.
And we are happy to provide more attention for sure for this cause as well. You can contact PCC for more information. Again, thanks to KXL's Tim Lance and to Jonathan Williams. Well, my family and I bought a house in Beaverton about 3 years ago, and all is awesome, except my mortgage payments has been going up each year. I figured it was property taxes, and I was right. So I checked in with my friend and real estate agent, Rick Sadel, to get the skinny. Here's how that sounded on Portland's Morning News. We're talking property taxes and how your mortgage payments can go up with our real estate expert from Keller Williams Realty and SadelRealEstate.com, Rick Sadel. Rick, good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. Can you explain to us first, briefly, how a mortgage works in terms of property taxes, how that is added to your monthly payment, and it's coming out right off the top?
Yeah, I think first it's important we understand exactly how liens work, right? And the reason that we're talking about taxes included in your mortgage is because tax liens become before all else, right? So even if you don't pay your mortgage payments and you don't pay your taxes and the taxes are $3,000 for a year and you didn't pay $20,000 worth of mortgages, the county can repossess your property on those taxes. So what the mortgage companies do is they collect what they call impounds, which is basically a year's worth of taxes in advance so that when it comes time, they can pay the taxes on your behalf and they know that the county is not going to take your property away from them. So that's important to understand to start with. So what happens is they take that money in impounds and then they refill it on a monthly basis, right? So let's pretend they collect $3,000 up front for your taxes, and then they pay the taxes and they refill that impounds before the taxes are due next year. So in essence, that's how the kind of the impounds work with mortgage payments.
Okay, that brings us to 2023. I noticed my mortgage has been going up a little bit the past several years because it appears my property value has increased. So do you get a chance to either pay a lump sum on that or pay just a little more every month with your mortgage?
Yeah, a lot of mortgage companies will actually give you the option. In fact, this just happened to my father. He called me and said, why do I have to pay this lump sum? In his case, he had the choice to either pay how much they'd gone up, and let's pretend it's $500, or he had the opportunity to spread that $500 out over 12 months. Because the mortgage company understands that property taxes are going to go up, and they understand it might be a little bit of a surprise, but they're not making money off of it. They're just paying your taxes on your behalf. So they will oftentimes give you, you know, like you said, 12 months to come up with that difference.
So it is something to be aware of then. Property taxes go up. Taxes go up in general for the most part. So as a homeowner with a mortgage, how can you prepare for that?
Well, I mean, I would start with doing my research, right? I mean, my understanding is that property taxes can't go up more than about 3% in Oregon. That was a measure that was put in place a while ago. But you can pretty much count on them going up. It's based on what they call real market value. It's not necessarily on the sales price of a house. It's their own kind of algorithm, how they figure it out. But as long as values are going up, your property taxes are likely to go up. Now, we'll see how about the next year, because I don't know that property values will go up this next year, but they definitely did this last year. So a lot of people are seeing that right now.
Fair enough. Good news, bad news, right? Your house is worth more, but guess what? It costs more.
Right. There's no free ride, unfortunately. The government always wants their share.
That's how that works. Thanks for explaining it to us, Rick. Good info. Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, thanks.
That's Rick Sadel, real estate expert with Keller Williams Realty and SadelRealEstate.com. You have been listening to Beyond the Headlines, a behind-the-scenes look at some of this week's stories. You can follow me on Twitter at Brett Recamp. If you missed anything, the podcast is up at KXL.com, and you can download the show on iTunes or Google Play. Just look for Beyond the Headlines, KXL. We now have 456 shows to choose from. For Alpha Media USA in downtown Portland, I'm Brett Recamp.
This has been Beyond the Headlines. In-depth interviews on topics of concern here in Portland and the Northwest. This has been a special presentation of Alpha Media.